You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday, the 5th of April, 2022, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, the first set of names have been sent off to my solicitor for him to format their testimonials. And if anybody else would like to help me out with my defence at the Radio Albion trial, then please do write to stormersubs@hushmail.com if you wish to have your testimonial entered as part of my defence. They cannot be anonymous. I basically need to get people's names and their phone number so that my solicitor can verify their identity and format the testimonial into a form that's acceptable to the court. And as I say, the first lot of names have been sent off over the weekend, so if you had written to me, you should expect to get a phone call from my solicitor at some point soon. Well, today I want to get into a news article about a young lady who thought that she had gender dysphoria, or I guess she did have gender dysphoria, but the solution was not to start taking the opposite sex's hormones. And she made a terrible mistake. She's going through an awful time of it. And she's speaking out about this in the hopes that it will prevent others from doing the same. From the age of 23, Sinead lived as a man, having privately thought of herself as transgender from the age of 21, only realizing 4 years ago at 27 that she had made a terrible mistake and detransitioning at 28. So she was lucky, really, that this didn't happen until she was 21. If you think about the youngsters that are 10 or 11 years old that are being encouraged to think that they are transgender and they're not actually going through puberty, at least she had gone through adolescence by this time and her body had developed in the way that it was meant to develop. But some damage is irreversible. She had a full mastectomy, and owing to the testosterone that she took for years, she has been left with a gruff voice and facial hair that she has to remove every 2 days. I am still trying to forgive myself and the medical profession, she says quietly. So unfortunately, she did actually mutilate herself and cut her breasts off on the advice of the medical profession. And because of this testosterone that she was taking, that's going to affect her for the rest of her life, I should imagine. It will have affected her voice. She's going to be more hairy, going to have facial hair on her chin. I mean, it's really tragic because she was quite an attractive young lady before she did this to her. She says, when I told doctors at the gender clinic I hated my body and wanted to be a man, they never questioned why. If they had, they might have discovered that my body dysphoria wasn't the cause of my problems. It was the symptom. I was about to make the biggest decision of my life, but I was not offered in-depth counselling. Instead, I was effectively left to self-diagnose. And again, this is because all professionals are told that they have to reaffirm a person's gender identity. And if she's saying, well, I think I'm transgender, if these doctors had then said, well, it might be another problem that you have there, and this could just be a symptom of it, they could be accused of being transphobic for not affirming the person's gender identity that they are presenting with. That's what is at the root of this problem, I think. Sinead's anger and her pointed accusations against the doctors and psychiatrists who enabled her transition as a frightened and deeply unhappy young woman, are incendiary, and as many have discovered to their cost, sure to provoke fierce opposing reactions. And the reasons why she was actually had this body dysphoria is because she didn't like the attention that she was getting from men. And I pointed this out the other day as well, that that may be a reason for this, is that young girls start developing. They may develop more than the young girls that are around them, and they may attract unwanted attention from men. And they may wish that they didn't attract that attention. And that seems to have been what is at the root of this. But doctors did not suggest to her that, that's what could be the cause of this, because by this time she had decided that the answer was that she was transgender. I mean, this has to be the only part of the medical industry where you can self-diagnose yourself, and the doctors then just have to go along with what you tell them. I mean, nowhere else could you just go to the doctor and say, oh, well, I've decided I've got cancer and you have to treat me for that. It just wouldn't happen. But now you can just go in there and say, oh, well, I've decided I'm transgender, and the doctors have to go along with it. What no one can dispute is that Shinee's scars, physical and psychological, run very deep. And this is what we hear about with these people that detransition, is the horrible mess that they've made of their bodies and the psychological damage that's been done to them. And also, I should imagine a lot of damage is done psychologically by taking the opposite sex's hormones. They're not just there to help us develop physically and to keep our bones and muscles going. They also affect us mentally and psychologically. And if you're taking the opposite sex's hormones, you're going to be splitting your very psyche up, aren't you? You're going to be behaving and thinking in male ways rather than behaving and thinking in female ways. Less obvious and rarely acknowledged are those scars inflicted on her sister Andrea. And again, this is something else we don't often think about. What happens to the families of these unfortunate people that believe that they have been born into the wrong body? Because the families, a lot of the time, will think, well, this just isn't right. We've known her all her life. She was never a tomboy. She never showed any sign of actually being male, and now she's got this idea that she is. And yet, if we try to talk her out of it, we're going to be accused of being transphobic. And again, we're going to run foul of the law, where you have to reaffirm a person's presented gender identity. And then you've got the children, or the nephews and the nieces that are used to seeing this person as an aunt. And then they're told that the aunt is no longer there, it's an uncle, which is obviously going to confuse the children. You know, most of the time we hear about these families and it's a single mother that is encouraging this and is encouraging their little boy to present as a little girl. And they seem to get very excited about the fact that the little boy is going to get his penis cut off. I mean, it's really, really sick when you think about it. These single mothers that think it's wonderful that they have a transgender child. And we don't often hear about the families that are torn apart because they understand that it's something else that is at the root of this problem, and yet they just can't do anything about it. And that seems to have been the case here with this girl's sister. The impact of these colossal decisions on a person's family is often totally eclipsed and ignored, and a lot of the time the family just get ostracized. And we know that in the schools, when this happens in the schools, the pupil is told not to tell the parents and to hide it from the parents because the parents may not agree with them. And of course, the parents have the advantage of wisdom that comes through age and having seen these things and being adults. And they're the ones that most care for the child, and yet they're cut out of this entirely by the authorities. When this happens with children, I mean, this was happening to an adult. It's still a terrible thing to happen, even when you're an adult. But as a child, obviously, it's 10 times worse. As Andrea, 34, that's the sister, puts it, the collateral damage has been horrific. My sister was eviscerated. In her place, I got this nasty, arrogant stranger who called himself my brother. I never even got to mourn the sister I lost. And that's an interesting use of a term there, to mourn the sister I lost. So it's almost as if their relative, their sibling, had died. And of course, the trans community do refer to it as dead naming. So if this sister, Andrea, was referring to the sister that she had lost, she would be accused of dead naming her brother. And the transgender person would have taken mortal offence at that and been very upset about it, I should imagine. The sister's experience is particularly pertinent when you consider the rise in referrals to adult gender identity clinics in the UK, which in some cases have quadrupled in the past decade. Of course, there's two reasons for this. One reason is the promotion of it in the media. Second reason is all the hormone disruptors that are in the environment. And I guess the left would say, well, the reason for why there is this increase is because it is now more acceptable. Doctors are now more used to looking for it and diagnosing it. But as we see here, it's not really the doctors that diagnose it. It's the patient that diagnoses it. And there's also been this really alarming increase in the number of children that are now presenting as the opposite gender. This adds up to a lot of families who might be in pain. This week it was revealed that doctors in Sussex will be incentivised with £178 a year for every adult they prescribe hormone therapy. And of course they're not talking about hormone therapy there for people that are low in testosterone or for women that are low in oestrogen. They're talking about prescribing the opposite sex's hormones. The NHS are very keen to prescribe the opposite sex's hormones. They're certainly not so keen to actually prescribe testosterone to young males that are low in testosterone. The average testosterone levels over the past 20 years have actually dropped by 20% in men. And the sperm count is dropping at the same rate. It's rather alarming. And yet nothing is being done about it. We don't see a big drive to encourage men to get tested to see whether their testosterone is low. Instead, we have a big drive to encourage men to identify as women. And I do think the upset with our hormone levels has a lot to do with this. The news, that's the news that doctors are now going to be incentivised to prescribe hormones, has outraged Shinnie. There should be no monetary incentive to prescribe a patient cross-sex hormones. A patient with gender dysphoria should only ever be prescribed cross-sex hormones after proper ongoing exploratory therapy. I mean, why are they rewarding doctors for doing this? Why are they incentivising them, trying to get them to give out as many hormones as possible to the opposite sex? I guess it's probably down to lobbying and pressure from the LGBTQ groups to encourage them to do this. We have to remember that at the heart of this, with most of the people that are involved in it, they don't see what they're doing as being a bad thing. They think that what they're doing is helping people, and they genuinely believe that most of these people are the wrong gender, born into the wrong body. And there's a lot of quack science that goes along with this. It all goes back to this crazy doctor, horrible doctor, that performed all these bizarre sexual experiments on two twins. I think one of them was born intersex, and the doctor removed his penis and then encouraged him to think that he was a girl when he wasn't a girl. And he even encouraged these two siblings to have sex together. It really, really twisted, really warped. And it was the results of his research, which claims that people can actually be born in the wrong body. It is worth looking it up. I haven't got the exact details of it here, but I know that we have discussed it before at Radio Albion, and I think Red Ice did a piece on it as well. Shinnie says, it is important to remember that not every patient who has gender dysphoria is trans, and not every patient who transitions will benefit from it. Cross-sex hormones are powerful, largely irreversible, and come with health risks. GPs should not be paid for every patient they prescribe them to. And there are all sorts of things that can mask themselves as gender dysphoria. You can have somebody that is bipolar, body dysmorphia, bulimia, just general depression and just going through puberty and being confused about how you feel about the opposite sex. All sorts of things could encourage somebody to believe that they actually has, that they actually have gender dysphoria. And we used to have in the past girls that would be tomboys when they were younger. And when they came to puberty, they would revert back to being feminine. And if you get girls like that and then start telling them that they're really boys and start giving them testosterone, and they end up regretting it, they've really ended up ruining their lives at a very young age. What she's saying here, that these cross-sex hormones are largely irreversible and they come with health risks. I mean, nobody knows what the effect is going to be on the bones, for instance. You need testosterone in order to put calcium into your bones to give strength to your bones. If you don't have testosterone, your bones are going to start to get weak and you're going to get osteopenia. And they don't know what the effect is of stopping taking cutting back testosterone and taking estrogen instead. They don't know what the long-term result of that is. You also need testosterone for red blood cells. Red blood cells are very important. Besides that, if you take the opposite sex's hormones, you're going to make yourself infertile. You're going to cause parts of your body to grow that shouldn't grow if you're a female and you are taking testosterone. The same as if you're a male and you're taking estrogen. Parts of the body will grow in ways that they should not actually grow in. And what, if you then stop taking those hormones, you're left with a body shape which is not the natural body shape that you then have to put up with for the rest of your life. I mean, the people that regret this are really cursing themselves for the rest of their lives after taking the medical route. And to think that GPs are now being encouraged to do that, and even if their patients then say, well, I regret doing that, I shouldn't have been prescribed that, then the GP's actually been rewarded for doing that. They are incentivizing them. A happy girl, Shine, now 31, was born in January 1991 to Andrew, a steelworker, and Brenda, a personal trainer, in Glasgow. We were just normal little girls who enjoyed making dens and playing with our Barbies, she says. Mum and Dad worked relentlessly, and so Andrea became my mini mum. So they sound like just a normal family. Andrew was a steelworker. I doubt whether he was particularly liberal. Brenda was a personal trainer. She sounds like she was into health and fitness, in Glasgow as well. I'm not sure that Glasgow is known for having a very large LGBTQ community, particularly not 25 years ago. So these sort of things don't just happen in liberal areas with extreme left-wing people. However, when Shine was 13, everything changed. After a petty row with her parents, Andrea, then 17, moved to the other side of the city, and Shine barely saw her. The loss had a profound effect on her. I was turning into a teenager without my big sister to guide me, she says. When I started growing huge breasts, I was mortified. Barely into my teens and just 5'5" tall, I'd been saddled with a 34 double D bust. I loathed my body. I became a beacon for men of all ages. And that's exactly what I was suggesting last week could be at the root of some of these cases with girls that end up thinking that they're men. It's really that they don't like the attention. And then here this week, we actually have an individual story of that. She says, even family friends started commenting and finding excuses to hug me extra tight. Well, I suggest they were hugging her extra tight because they thought that they could see that she was a little bit concerned about something. They're probably trying to reassure her. I'm not sure that family friends would have been hugging her extra tight, meaning that in a sexual way. I mean, you wouldn't expect family friends to be doing something like that. I think maybe she was a little bit paranoid there. She says, inside, I was still a little girl, frightened and abandoned. All the unwanted attention, the ogling and the wolf whistles was constant. And again, you know, the men that were probably doing that, they wouldn't be doing that, I doubt, if they knew that it was upsetting her. I think they would have been doing that thinking that they're paying her a compliment. They're saying, hey, you look really great, girl. You know, don't get paranoid. Don't feel unsure of yourself. You look fantastic for your age, much better than the girls around you. That would have been the origin of those wolf whistles. I doubt very much whether they were intended to make her feel upset with herself, least of all to make her think that she was actually a man. Things got even worse when, aged 16, Sinead got a Saturday job. A staff member started groping me, she recalls. I was too timid to stop him. He would kiss me and grab my bottom every chance he got. I didn't dare tell Mum because she had helped get me the job. And again, this is really awkward, isn't it? You do get horseplay when you're working with girls in factories where you got like a multi-gender area. The girls are often grabbing the blokes more than the blokes grabbing the girls. And usually it's all fairly good natured, but it would seem here as if she didn't take it in the way that maybe he intended it, or maybe he was genuinely malicious in doing this, and he shouldn't have been doing it, I guess, because she obviously wasn't happy about it. But she says she was too timid to stop him. So it means that she didn't stop him. She didn't say, no, I don't like that. I mean, he may very well have thought that she was just playing around, so he was just slapping her butt and playing around. I mean, it doesn't say that it went any further than that. It doesn't say that he asked her out on a date or anything like that. It just sounds like it was horseplay at work. Aged 19, Sinead escaped to start a four-year degree course in history and archaeology at Glasgow University, planning to become an archivist, but the damage had been done. Even when nice-looking, kind boys showed an interest in her, she was scared and filled with self-disgust. I began to loathe my body, she says. I started wishing I had been born a boy just so this would stop. And again, I mean, the idea that any of those men that were wolf-whistling, or this guy that was slapping her behind at work, the idea that any of them would have wanted her to think that she would wish that she had been a boy, I mean, I doubt whether anything like that would have even entered their heads. They would have thought that she would take this as a compliment, all the attention. Women like attention. They do like attention. That's why they wear makeup. That's why they like to wear nice clothes. It's just women do like to be the center of attention. And these men will have thought that they were paying her a compliment. Again, this just shows you the difference that there is between men and women in the way that they look at things. She was looking at this and she wasn't wanting the attention. She didn't want to stand out like that. And it made her think, well, perhaps I'm not a woman because I'm not liking this attention. Deciding she must be gay, Sinead started a relationship with a woman, news which she broke to a surprised but accepting Andrea. When she told her older sister about the abuse she had suffered as a 16-year-old, however, she wasn't so sympathetic. I thought it was just typical sexist behaviour all women learn to tolerate, says Andrea. I told her to forget it and move on. It was stupid of me. I should have asked more questions, taken it more seriously, and perhaps suggested counselling. And I guess if Andrea, the big sister, had actually been at home, it probably wouldn't have been so bad. And she could have said to her, well, look on the bright side of it. You're the centre of attention. These blokes are trying to compliment you. It's just the difference that there is between men and women. Men will compliment you, or some types of men will compliment you by wolf whistling. And they're trying to make wolf whistling into a misogynistic hate crime at the moment. She says it's impossible to know whether things would have turned out differently if she had. I think they would have turned out differently. But the problem is, I mean, if she had have gone to try and get counselling, if she'd been saying, well, I think I'm transgender, the counsellor would have had to say, yes, you must be. And what pronouns do you want me to refer to you as? Feeling rejected by Andrea when her relationship started falling apart after 8 months, that's the lesbian relationship, Sinead turned to the internet. I started with a simple Google search, typing, I hate being a woman, what can I do? She explains. I expected to find coping strategies and emotional stories. Instead, I found myself bombarded with information about transitioning. I was only 20 and pretty naive. Until then, I didn't even know it was possible to change gender. Sinead grabbed onto the idea like a life raft, and within days she became convinced that she was a trans man. Astonishingly, none of the professionals she was to meet over the next crucial years ever questioned her self-diagnosis. Well, of course they won't, because you have to reaffirm whatever somebody's gender is that they are presenting to you as. That is the polite and courteous thing to do anyway. But when you're talking about professionals and counselling, you would expect them to suggest that there may be other reasons that are at the root of this dysphoria and this depression. She said, I had read that you needed to live as a man before you could start treatment, so I cut my shoulder-length hair immediately and started wearing baggy jeans and shirts and binding my chest to disguise my breasts, she says. I mean, that must have been very painful if she was large-breasted. She said, I was ecstatic when in my first year at university I asked a cleaner to direct me to the toilets, and he directed me to the gents. Well, that's because she was at university and he's been encouraged to do that. I don't think he would have thought she's an actual biological male when he looked at her. Andrea didn't suspect a thing. Alarm bells didn't even ring when one night Shinee told me, I want to be a boy, she says. She was only 21, and as my husband Barry, who has always adored Shinee, put it, she was still trying to figure out who she was. But in early 2014, Shinee referred herself to Sandyford, Glasgow's gender clinic, and after brief counselling was put on a 12-month waiting list for treatment. By now, I was convinced all my problems would disappear when I became a man. I was so devastated by the weight that I became suicidal. I was drinking heavily and misdirecting so much of my self-hatred against my family, I wouldn't even answer Andrea's phone calls. When I finally started treatment at Sandyford in early 2015, I had changed my name to Sean and identified completely as male. Telling the doctor about my suicide attempt, I blamed it entirely on my body dysphoria. So it's not that she was being discriminated against, it was depression at thinking that she just didn't like her body. She didn't like her body is what's at the root of this, not that she actually thought that she was a male. She just thought that if she changed her body, then she wouldn't get the unwanted attention from males. It's so sad, really. I mean, what she really needed to do is just meet a decent man, basically. Weeks later, Shinee, now Sean, was prescribed testosterone. I was euphoric. I was convinced that I was about to live the life I was meant to in the body I should have been born in, she says. Within weeks, my voice grew gruff and masculine, my curves started disappearing, and my body grew angular. 7 months in, around my 25th birthday, stubble started appearing on my chin. Andrea was silently horrified. I was terrified of upsetting her and risking another mental breakdown. Selfishly, I was also terrified she would turn her back on me for good. Well, I don't think that's really selfish. I mean, you don't want to fall out with your family. It's not a selfish thing to think that you don't want to fall out with your family or your siblings. But the biggest challenge was Shinee's personality change. Testosterone made her angry, moody, and aggressive. And that's not because testosterone makes men angry, moody, and aggressive. It's because women's bodies aren't made for testosterone. They're made for estrogen. My little sister had been wiped out, says Andrea. Shinee was funny, quirky, and loving. Sean was a woman-hater with a foul temper. Shinee had always loved me and looked up to me. Sean sneered at me and treated me like dirt. Our whole past was obliterated. Sean wanted to pretend Shinee had never existed, and with it, our entire childhood. It was as though I didn't exist either. See, all these issues that affect the family, it's not just the person that decides to transition, it's everybody else that's involved in the family. Andrea also had to explain to her children why they had lost an auntie. Raythin, who was only 7, had loved Shinee but was scared of Sean. Mum and I attended a support group for families at the gender clinic, but we got no answers, nothing. In desperation, I even turned to a Facebook support group, and I was called small-minded and transphobic just because I was worried for her. And this is it. You just get the bullying from the left when you talk about these things and when you say, well, you're actually concerned that it may be a misdiagnosis. It affected us all. Mum was confused and worried. Dad was angry and point blank refused to call his daughter Sean. In fact, he only relented when he tried to introduce the burly young man with stubble as his daughter. And his mates burst out laughing. I have to say, she doesn't actually make a very convincing man. You can tell that she's female by her chin. Shinee was 26 and had been taking testosterone for 2 years when she was referred by Sandyford Clinic for a double mastectomy. I was furious with the doctors who had mutilated her, says Andrea. what were they thinking exactly? You know, how can they do this? How can they mutilate somebody on their say-so, on their diagnosis? Perfectly healthy organs, perfectly healthy breasts, and a doctor just cuts them off because the person says that they're in actual fact they're a man. I mean, dysphoria, it used to be looked at as a mental problem, and now we're effectively saying, oh, it's everybody else that has the mental problem because they think you're still a woman when you've decided that you're a man. A creeping realization started to haunt Shinne. Becoming a man was supposed to make her feel powerful and complete, but she felt scared, ashamed, and inadequate. This time there was no life raft to cling to. I'd transitioned and I still hated myself, she says. And I often point out that when these people transition, they realize that there's parts of the body that they can't actually change. They can't change their chromosomes. They can't change their bone structure. They can't change the size of their hands. They can't change the size of their feet. But just the fact that they have actually transitioned and their body is no longer what it is naturally supposed to be, that's going to cause depression as well. She says, I was so angry and ashamed. How had I been so stupid, blinkered and selfish? And why had no professional tried to stop me? Her anguish lends weight to the argument that saw a dramatic government U-turn last week on a complete ban on so-called conversion therapy for transgender people. It had been argued that doctors would be unable to question young people like Shinne about their decision. Well, they're unable to anyway, because they have to affirm a person's presented gender. But the government did actually U-turn on this, and all the LGBTQ groups have refused to go along to the government's LGBTQ conference that they're having at the moment. They're still banning conversion therapy for everything else, and the only reason why they're allowing it, or so-called allowing it, for transgender people, they're allowing it so that doctors can ask questions about this. But what I don't get is, if they're trying to ban conversion therapy for people once they are gay, why is it allowed for people that are not gay? I mean, all you see all the time is promotion of homosexuality. I mean, that is the equivalent of conversion therapy, trying to turn straight people into gay people. And all the time we see this promotion of transgenderism, which is effectively conversion therapy, trying to turn straight people into gay people. It's as if they say people can only naturally be either transgender or homosexual, and we have to protect people from trying to change them back from that. But heterosexuality, oh no, that's not natural. Heterosexuality isn't a natural way to be, so we will allow conversion therapy to promote heterosexuals turning into homosexuals and transgender. Shinne was so depressed, she quit her degree course just 2 months before her final exams. Then, seeing no way out, she tried to take her life. Luckily, Andrea found her in time. So that's twice she's tried to kill herself, and it's not down to discrimination. I mean, everybody here has just gone along with her saying that she was transgender. Sobbing, Shinne told Andrea she had made a terrible mistake. I was devastated at what she'd done to herself. I was worried what would happen next because I knew there was no quick fix. Shinne reached out through the internet to other women who had detransitioned. They are a small but supportive group. And think of the pressure that they must be under from all the promoters of transgenderism. I bet they get a lot of hate for saying that they have detransitioned and they regret doing this. They helped me understand all the regret and rage I was feeling, she says. I know of at least 100 women like me. We are just the tip of the iceberg. In October 2019, without talking to the clinic that she feels badly let her down, Shinne stopped taking testosterone. The first year was horrendous. I had horrific mood swings. I sounded like a man, but every day I looked more like a woman with stubble. Strangers didn't know what to make of me. I felt like a freak. I bet she felt a lot worse there than she did with the breasts that made her the centre of attention. After putting her through so much, Shinne wasn't sure Andrea would stick by her. There was no question, says Andrea. She's my sister. I detested Sean, but that doesn't mean I love Shinne any less. In my mind, they are two completely separate people. We talk on the phone most days and are the closest we have ever been. Now, that's interesting, isn't it? Taking the opposite sex's hormones will literally change your whole psychology so that you become an entirely different person. It's not just the physical changes, it's the psychological ones as well. Shinee now has a boyfriend, a 28-year-old delivery driver, who she says loves me for who I am, and that's given me huge confidence. I am thankful I didn't go as far as a hysterectomy and reassignment surgery to create male genitals. Well, I bet he's extremely thankful that she didn't go that far. Without Andrea's unwavering love, I'm not sure I would have come through this, but I worry for all the others out there who don't have supportive families. I know there are many women like me too intimidated to speak out, but our voices need to be heard if we are to protect vulnerable girls and young women from unnecessary and irreversible treatments. And it's the same for the boys and the young men as well that end up causing themselves irreversible harm with the help of the medical industry. And just to finish up with, when approached, a spokesman for the Sandyford Clinic, the gender reassignment clinic, said, patients attending Sandyford's gender identity service undergo a full assessment by a multidisciplinary team of psychiatrists, sexual health doctors, psychology and occupational therapists. The evaluation takes multiple engagements over an extended period of time to ensure patients fully understand the process, are aware of all implications, and are enabled to make fully informed choices. While we can't go into individual patient details, we can confirm all patients undergo this extended evaluation. We are sorry to hear Miss Watson feels that she didn't receive adequate support and would be happy to discuss her care with her directly. So they say that they have this big full team that are there and on hand, and yet none of them are able to suggest that something else might be at the root of the dysphoria. They all have to reaffirm the person's presented gender identity, and until they change that, I think we're going to continue to see these sorts of things happen. I mean, the government may say that they're not going to ban transgender conversion therapy, but all the while you doctors and professionals have to reaffirm the gender, then it's not going to change, is it? They're not going to be able to suggest that, for instance, it may be autism. Something like 60% of the youngsters that present that they claim have gender dysphoria are also autistic. I mean, that could be at the root of it. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.